heads of state and government, directors general of international organizations, Mr. Secretary General, Madam President of the European Commission, Mr. Vice President, Deputy Prime Minister, ladies and gentlemen, dear guests, dear friends, just a quick word to say how delighted we are to welcome you here yesterday. Many of you had conversations and engaged in dialogue yesterday here at the Grand Palais, which was built for the World Expo in 1900 and showed how France is committed to progress and science. And it's the first time that this newly renovated pavilion, the Palais d'Antin, has been made open once again to the general public. So it was built, this pavilion was built in 1937. It was Mr. Perrin who was a Nobel laureate for chemistry, and he was convinced that by demonstrating to the French and to the world what science can do, we could convince them to embrace progress and therefore have science serve the interests of humanity. And I think that is our challenge with artificial intelligence, which is to ensure that these incredible technological innovations with new computing power, that all of the incredible advances of AI and its implications in various sectors be in the interests of humanity in a world that is disrupted by crisis. Thanks to open dialogue, we're lucky enough to have India, the US, China, Europe, the African continent, and the Latin American continent here. We have heads of state and government, researchers, civil society, entrepreneurs, investors. And that gives us an opportunity to engage in dialogue and to advance on this path of understanding science and ensuring that it serves collective progress. I won't be much longer. I'm incredibly pleased to have you here at this summit, which I co-chair with Prime Minister Modi. And so, dear Prime Minister, dear Narendra, I'm actually going to give you the floor now so that we can hear from you and hear what India has to say to the world on AI. Thank you very much for being here.
Excellencies, friends, let me begin with a simple experiment. If you upload your medical report to an AI app, it can explain in simple language, free of any jargon, what it means for your health. But if you ask the same app to draw an image of someone writing with their left hand, the app will most likely draw someone writing with the right hand. Because that is what the training data is dominated by. It shows that while the positive potential of AI is absolutely amazing, there are many biases that we need to think carefully about. That is why I am grateful to my friend, President Macron, for hosting this summit and for inviting me to co-chair it. Friends, AI is already reshaping our polity, our economy, our security, and even our society. AI is writing the code for humanity. AI is writing the code for humanity in this century. But it is very different from other technology milestones in human history. AI is developing at an unprecedented scale and speed, and being adopted and deployed even faster. There is also a deep interdependence across borders. Therefore, there is a need for collective global efforts to establish governance and standards that upload our shared values, address risks, and build trust. But governance is not just about managing risks and rivalries. It is also about promoting innovation and deploying it for the global good. So, we must think deeply and discuss openly about innovation and governance. Governance is also about ensuring access to all, especially in the global south. It is where the capabilities are most lacking, be it compute, power, talent, data, or the financial resources. Friends, AI can help transform millions of lives by improving health, education, agriculture, and so much more. It can help create a world in which the journey to sustainable development goals becomes easier and faster. To do this, we must pull together resources and talent. We must develop open source systems that enhance trust and transparency. We must build quality data sets free from biases. We must democratize technology and create people-centric applications. We must address concerns related to cybersecurity, disinformation, and deepfakes. And we must also ensure that technology is rooted in local ecosystems for it to be effective and useful. Friend, loss of jobs is AI's most feared disruption. But history has shown that work does not disappear due to technology. Its nature changes and new types of jobs are created. We need to invest in skilling and reskilling our people for an AI-driven future. Friends, there is no doubt that the high energy intensity of AI needs to be looked into. This will require green power to fuel its future. India and France have worked together for years through initiatives like the International Solar Alliance to harness the power of the sun. As we advance our partnership to AI, it is a natural progression from sustainability to innovation to shape a smarter and responsible future. At the same time, sustainable AI does not only mean using clean energy. AI models must also be efficient and sustainable in size, data needs, and resources requirements. After all, the human brain manages to compose poetry and design spaceships using less power than most light bulbs. Friends, India has successfully built a digital public infrastructure for over 1.4 billion people at a very low cost. It is built around an open and accessible network. It has regulations and a wide range of applications to modernize our economy, reform governance, and transform the lives of our people. We have unlocked the power of data through our data empowerment and protection architecture. And we have made digital commerce democratic and accessible to all. This vision is the foundation of India's national AI mission. That is why, during our G20 presidency, we built a consensus on harnessing AI responsibly for good and for all. Today, India leads in AI adoption and techno-legal solutions on data privacy. We are developing AI applications for public good. We have one of the world's largest AI talent pools. India is building its own large language model, considering our diversity. We also have a unique public-private partnership model for pooling resources like compute power. It is made available to our startups and researchers at an affordable cost. And India is ready to share its experience and expertise to ensure that AI future is for good and for all. Friends, we are at the dawn of the AI age that will shape the course of humanity. Some people worry about machines becoming superior in intelligence to humans. But no one holds the key to our collective future and shared destiny other than us humans. That sense of responsibility must guide us. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm here this morning just to help things along. So welcome again to the closing plenary session of the AI Action Summit. So for the past day, we have been discussing and debating what is essentially the future of our societies, the future of our children, the future of our planet in the age of artificial intelligence. Our co-hosts, President Macron, Prime Minister Modi, have exhorted all of you to push the limits of your creativity, to push the limits of your imagination during these 2 days. And as we saw from the opening video, delegates have discussed AI's impact on the environment, on labor, on diversity, and on making sure that AI does not get out of control, which is something that technologists are openly worried about. AI has, in the past few years, inspired outbursts of hope, but also of fear. It has attracted an astounding amount of money. In fact, the prospect of another $97 billion just last night. And is setting up epic clashes in business and potentially in geopolitics as well. France and the European Union have pledged a lighter touch in regulation to help AI and investment in AI flourish. But as President Macron said last night at dinner, and I hope you don't mind my quoting you, paradise cannot mean the Wild West. Indeed, there may be no better measure of the stakes for the world than the simple fact of this high-octane guest list here today in this room. We have a large cross-section of global leaders in government, technology, finance, civil society. You will set and have already shaped the future of this technology. As the editor of a global news organization whose news users are in all of your countries and look to us for fact-based news on all of your companies, I can assure you that the world is watching this event very, very carefully. So, with who knows? I mean, maybe it is possible that years from now, people and perhaps even a conscious AI will look back upon this meeting as a milestone in humanity's relationship with thinking machines. So with this, I would like to welcome all the panelists of the sessions today to the stage. If you could all come up together, even though you're in two different sessions. So I'll call you one by one. Ms. Ursula von der Leyen, the President of the European Commission, please. Mr. Farrell Williams, I saw you earlier. Yes, your seats are on your chairs. Mr. Artis, Mr. Farrell Williams. Ms. Anne Bouffaud, the Special Envoy of the President of the Republic, please. Mr. Sundar Pichai, CEO of Google, please. Ms. Soo-yeon Choi, Director General of Naver. Saw you last night at dinner. I know you're here. There you are. Mr. Petteri Orpo, Prime Minister of Finland, please. And Ms. Doreen Bogdan-Martin, Secretary General of the International Communications Union. And last but not least, Mr. Faith Birol, Director General of the International Energy Agency. So the first session, which will be moderated by Anne Bouvreau, who has been instrumental, and a big thank you to Anne for setting up this entire event of the past 2 days, will be... It will be about unlocking the opportunities of AI. So with that, Anne, over to you.
Working. Thank you. Thank you so much. Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for being here. This notion of unlocking opportunities and shared progress has been our driver towards the preparation of the summit. Throughout all the preparation, the trips that I have taken, I have heard all over the world everyone telling me we want to be part of this AI revolution. We want to be able to develop our own solutions. We want to be actors. We want to be players. And we are looking forward to come to Paris to be able to have this discussion. So, of course, there is great hope from AI. There's hope for progress in medical research. There's hope for progress in science. There's hope for new climate solutions. There's also hope for progress and new art and creativity, and we will be discussing this. But how can we make sure that these opportunities are unlocked in the short term, now or very soon? We will hear today from our distinguished guests and speakers what they are doing to make this possible by defining strategies, by listening to the world's experts, by announcing investments, and by a number of actions. We will also, during this session, be talking about an initiative that is unveiled at the summit today, a decentralized partnership to help harness AI's vast potential. But before we get into more detail, it gives me great pleasure to welcome His Excellency, Vice President of the United States of America, J.D. Vance, to come to the podium. It is an honor. It is your first trip, international trip, outside of the United States since taking office. We're delighted to have you here.
The kind introduction, and I want to start by thanking President Macron for hosting the event and, of course, for the lovely dinner last night. During the dinner, President Macron looked at me and asked if I would like to speak, and I said, Mr. President, I'm here for the good company and free wine, but I have to earn my keep today. And I, of course, want to thank Prime Minister Modi for being here and for co-hosting the summit, for all of you for participating. And I'm not here this morning to talk about AI safety, which was the title of the conference a couple of years ago. I'm here to talk about AI opportunity. When conferences like this convene to discuss a cutting-edge technology, oftentimes I think our response is to be too self-conscious, too risk-averse. But never have I encountered a breakthrough in tech that so clearly calls us to do precisely the opposite. Now, our administration, the Trump administration, believes that AI will have countless revolutionary applications in economic innovation, job creation, national security, healthcare, free expression, and beyond. And to restrict its development now will not only unfairly benefit incumbents in the space, it would mean paralyzing one of the most promising technologies we have seen in generations. Now, with that in mind, I'd like to make four main points today. Number one, this administration will ensure that American AI technology continues to be the gold standard worldwide, and we are the partner of choice for others, foreign countries, and certainly businesses as they expand their own use of AI. Number two, we believe that excessive regulation of the AI sector could kill a transformative industry just as it's taking off, and we'll make every effort to encourage pro-growth AI policies. And I like to see that deregulatory flavor making its way into a lot of the conversations this conference. Number three, we feel very strongly that AI must remain free from ideological bias and that American AI will not be co-opted into a tool for authoritarian censorship. And finally, number four, the Trump administration will maintain a pro-worker growth path for AI so it can be a potent tool for job creation in the United States. And I appreciate Prime Minister Modi's point. AI, I really believe, will facilitate and make people more productive. It is not going to replace human beings. It will never replace human beings. And I think too many of the leaders in the AI industry, when they talk about this fear of replacing workers, I think they really miss the point. AI, we believe, is going to make us more productive, more prosperous, and more free. The United States of America is the leader in AI, and our administration plans to keep it that way. The U.S. possesses all components across the full AI stack, including advanced semiconductor design, frontier algorithms, and, of course, transformational applications. Now, the computing power this stack requires is integral to advancing AI technology. And to safeguard America's advantage, the Trump administration will ensure that the most powerful AI systems are built in the U.S. with American-designed and manufactured chips. Now, just because we're the leader doesn't mean we want to or need to go it alone, of course. And let me be emphatic about this point. America wants to partner with all of you. And we want to embark on the AI revolution before us with a spirit of openness and collaboration. But to create that kind of trust, we need international regulatory regimes that fosters the creation of AI technology rather than strangles it. And we need our European friends in particular to look to this new frontier with optimism rather than trepidation. Now, the development of cutting-edge AI in the U.S. is no accident. By preserving an open regulatory environment, we've encouraged American innovators to experiment and to make unparalleled R&D investments. Of the $700 billion, give or take, that's estimated to be spent on AI in 2028, over half of it will likely be invested in the United States of America. Now, this administration will not be the one to snuff out the startups and the grad students producing some of the most groundbreaking applications of artificial intelligence. Instead, our laws will keep big tech, little tech, and all other developers on a level playing field. Now, with the president's recent executive order on AI, we're developing an AI action plan that avoids an overly precautionary regulatory regime while ensuring that all Americans benefit from the technology and its transformative potential. Now, we invite your countries to work with us and to follow that model if it makes sense for your nations. However, the Trump administration is troubled by reports that some foreign governments are considering tightening the screws on U.S. tech companies with international footprints. Now, America cannot and will not accept that, and we think it's a terrible mistake, not just for the United States of America, but for your own countries. The U.S. innovators of all sizes already know what it's like to deal with onerous international rules. Many of our most productive tech companies are forced to deal with the EU's Digital Services Act and the massive regulations it created about taking down content and policing so-called misinformation. And of course, we want to ensure the internet is a safe place. But it is one thing to prevent a predator from preying on a child on the internet, and it is something quite different to prevent a grown man or woman from accessing an opinion that the government thinks is misinformation. Meanwhile, for smaller firms, navigating the GDPR means paying endless legal compliance costs or otherwise risking massive fines. Now, for some, the easiest way to avoid the dilemma has been to simply block EU users in the first place. Is this really the future that we want, ladies and gentlemen? I think the answer for all of us should be no. Now, there's no issue where we worry about more than regulation when it comes to energy. And again, I appreciated the comments of so many at the conference because they recognize that we stand now at the frontier of an AI industry that is hungry for reliable power and high-quality semiconductors. Yet too many of our friends are deindustrializing on the one hand and chasing reliable power out of their nations and off their grids with the other. The AI future is not going to be won by hand-wringing about safety, it will be won by building, from reliable power plants to the manufacturing facilities that can produce the chips of the future. Now, at a personal level, what excites me most about AI is that it is grounded in the real and the physical economy. The success of the sector isn't just a matter of smart people sitting in front of a computer screen and coding. It depends on those who work with their hands. Even as robotics will change our factories, it will certainly make our healthcare providers better at treating diseases, but it will also depend on the data produced by those healthcare providers, by those doctors and nurses. I believe it will help us create and store new modes of power in the future, but right now, AI cannot take off unless the world builds the energy infrastructure to support it. Now, it's my view that tech innovation over the last 20 years has often conjured images of smart people staring at computer screens, engineering in the world of bits. But the AI economy will primarily depend on and transform the world of atoms. Now, at this moment, we face the extraordinary prospect of a new industrial revolution, one on par with the invention of the steam engine or Bessemer steel. But it will never come to pass if overregulation deters innovators from taking the risks necessary to advance the ball. Nor will it occur if we allow AI to become dominated by massive players looking to use the tech to censor or control users' thoughts. And I'd ask if you step back a moment and ask yourself, who is most aggressively demanding that we, meaning political leaders gathered here today, do the most aggressive regulation? It is very often the people who already have an incumbent advantage in the market. And when a massive incumbent comes to us asking us for safety regulations, we ought to ask whether that safety regulation is for the benefit of our people or whether it's for the benefit of the incumbent. Now, over the last few years, we've watched as governments, businesses, and nonprofit organizations have advanced unpopular, and I believe downright ahistorical, social agendas through AI. In the U.S., we had AI image generators trying to tell us that George Washington was black or that America's doughboys in World War I were in fact women. Now, we laugh at this now, and of course it was ridiculous, but we have to remember the lessons from that ridiculous moment. And what we take from it is that the Trump administration will ensure that AI systems developed in America are free from ideological bias and never restrict our citizens' right to free speech. We can trust our people to think, to consume information, to develop their own ideas, and to debate with one another in the open marketplace of ideas. Now, we've also watched as hostile foreign adversaries have weaponized AI software to rewrite history, surveil users, and censor speech. This is hardly new, of course. As they do with other tech, some authoritarian regimes have stolen and used AI to strengthen their military, intelligence, and surveillance capabilities, capture foreign data, and create propaganda to undermine other nations' national security. I want to be clear. This administration will block such efforts. Full stop. We will safeguard American AI and chip technologies from theft and misuse, work with our allies and partners to strengthen and extend these protections, and close pathways to adversaries attaining AI capabilities that threaten all of our people. And I would also remind our international friends here today that partnering with such regimes, it never pays off in the long term. From CCTV to 5G equipment, we're all familiar with cheap tech in the marketplace that's been heavily subsidized and exported by authoritarian regimes. But as I know, and I think some of us in this room have learned from experience, partnering with them means chaining your nation to an authoritarian master that seeks to infiltrate, dig in, and seize your information infrastructure. Should a deal seem too good to be true, just remember the old adage that we learned in Silicon Valley: if you aren't paying for the product, you are the product. Finally, this administration wants to be very clear about one last point. We will always center American workers in our AI policy. We refuse to view AI as a purely disruptive technology that will inevitably automate away our labor force. We believe, and we will fight for policies that ensure, that AI is going to make our workers more productive, and we expect that they will reap the rewards with higher wages, better benefits, and safer and more prosperous communities. From law to medicine, manufacturing, the most immediate applications of AI almost all involve supplementing, not replacing, the work being done by Americans. Now, combined with this administration's worker-first approach to immigration, we believe that a U.S. labor force prepared to use AI to its fullest extent will instead attract the attention of businesses that have offshored some of these roles. To accomplish this, the administration will make sure that America has the best trained workforce in the world. Our schools will teach students how to manage, how to supervise, and how to interact with AI-enabled tools as they become more and more a part of our everyday lives. And as AI creates new jobs and industries, our government, businesses, and labor organizations have an obligation to work together to empower the workers, not just of the United States, but all over the country, all over the world. To that end, for all major AI policy decisions coming from the federal government, the Trump administration will guarantee American workers a seat at the table, and we're very proud of that. Now, I've taken up enough of your time, so I'd like to close with just a quick story. This is a beautiful country, President Macron, and I know that you're proud of it and should be. And yesterday, as I was touring Les Invalides with General Gravette with my three kids, he was kind enough to show me the sword that belonged to America's dearest international friend from our own revolution, of course, the Marquis de Lafayette. He let me hold the sword, but of course he made me put on the white gloves beforehand. And it got me thinking of this country, France, and of course of my own country, and of the beautiful civilization that we have built together with weapons like that saber. Weapons that are dangerous in the wrong hands, but are incredible tools for liberty and prosperity in the right hands. I couldn't help but think of the conference today. If we choose the wrong approach on other things that could be conceived of as dangerous, things like AI, and choose to hold ourselves back, it will alter not only our GDP or the stock market, but the very future of the project that Lafayette and the American founders set off to create. Now, this doesn't mean, of course, that all concerns about safety go out the window, but focus matters, and we must focus now on the opportunity to catch lightning in a bottle, unleash our most brilliant innovators, and use AI to improve the well-being of our nations and their peoples. With great confidence, I can say it is an opportunity that the Trump administration will not squander, and we hope everyone convened here today feels exactly the same. Thank you, and God bless you all.
Thank you.
Well, joining me now is longtime Silicon Valley investor and Mark Zuckerberg's mentor in the early days of Facebook, Roger McNamee, who has now turned his attention to stopping social media from destroying democracy. Roger, you've got this global summit in Paris, and at the end of it, the UK and the US say, no, we're not signing that. What's going on?
So fundamentally, I think that AI represents a massive challenge to democracy on a global basis. The essential problem with it is the technology has been around for about 50 years, and every few years they promise this time we're going to be able to make a machine that thinks like a human. Just give us more money, more processing power, and more data. And every time they do, we get the same outcome, which is a really crummy set of products that cause more harm than good. You've seen predictive policing. You've seen the way it's used for mortgage approvals and job approvals. Basically, AI is a black box that nobody can criticize and nobody can challenge. And what's going on in the United States right now is that Elon Musk and his people are trying to put AI in place of civil servants in every part of the government that matters. And their goal, very simply put, I think, is to replace democracy with technology that they control. And that is an incredibly scary thing.
And quite a big claim as well. There are plenty of people, obviously, who say that AI does some marvelous things, particularly in the world of healthcare and so on. But there's a reason, aren't there, that all these countries are trying to get ascendancy in this world. So I'm just trying to figure out why you think the UK and the US have gone out on a limb in this way, not signing up to this agreement.
I can't speak for the UK, but the United States is very simple, that the largest technology companies in the United States made an assertion that there was only one way to build the next generation of AI, and that would require roughly $1 trillion worth of investment, which would require us to change the way electric power is created in the United States, to use up huge amounts of fresh water, to steal every copyright that exists, and to invade people's personal privacy, in exchange for which we would get this miraculous change. We've spent about a quarter of that money already. And the results are, I think the best thing you can say, very disappointing. Listen, I absolutely believe that AI has valuable use cases. The problem is it's not a technology that's ready for the prime time it's being put into. And if you put it in place today, I think the fundamental thing that's going to happen in the U.S. and maybe in the U.K. is that you're going to see the government used as the candy jar to pay all the costs for this technology that's not producing results that are nearly as good as were promised a few years ago.
We could do with a bit of AI to tidy up this internet connection that we have. But that aside, I mean, do you think that this new Trump U.S. administration wants to opt out really of any form of global AI regulation, full stop?
Yes, I think they want to opt out of everything global. I think their plan is very simple, that they would like to change the U.S. role in the world from being the most important economy and the country that really leads in all kinds of international affairs to a country that's very insular and that is very profit-centric. And, you know, I think they've been quite open about that. And, you know, the United States voted for it, and the current polling suggests it's still a relatively popular position.
Okay, and just very briefly, Silicon Valley civil war. What's going on between Elon Musk and Sam Altman or OpenAI?
It's much ado about nothing. These people live in these giant homes that are essentially fortresses that are more like prisons. They don't get to interact with anybody else except each other. And so they have this very childlike, you know, teenage boy competitions one against the other. And the problem is all of us are victims of it. And it doesn't have to be this way. Technology can empower humanity, but that's not what they're doing with it. They're using technology to exploit human weakness. Mm.
Roger, thank you so much for joining us. And yeah, technology sometimes lets us down as well, doesn't it? And apologies for the picture break up there.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your comments. I would now like, it gives me great honor to call to the podium Her Excellency, President of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen.
Monsieur le Président, cher Emmanuel.
President, dear Emmanuel.
Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, this is the third summit on AI in just over 1 year. In the same period, three new generations of ever more powerful AI models have been released. Some expect models that will approach human reasoning within a year. Now, the past summits focused on laying the groundwork for AI safety. We build a shared consensus that AI will be safe and that it will promote our values and benefit humanity. But this summit is focused on action, and that is exactly what we need right now. The time has come for us to formulate a vision of where we want AI to take us as a society and as humanity. And then we need to act and accelerate Europe in getting there. And that is what I'd like to address today, Europe's specific place in the global race on AI. We want Europe to be one of the leading AI continents. And this means embracing a way of life where AI is everywhere. You all know that AI can help us boost competitiveness, protect our security, shore up public health, make access to knowledge and information more democratic. And this is what you, the entrepreneurs, the researchers, the investors, the business leaders are showcasing here in Paris and that you are doing every single day. This is a glimpse of the AI continent we want to become. Now, too often, I hear that Europe is late to the race, while the United States or China have already gotten ahead. I disagree, because the AI race is far from being over. Truth is, we're only at the beginning. The frontier is constantly moving. Global leadership is still up for grabs. And behind the frontier lies the whole world of AI adoption. AI has only just begun to be adopted in the key sectors of our economy and for the key challenges of our times. And this should be Europe's focus. Bringing AI to industry-specific applications and harness its power for productivity and for people. And this is where Europe can truly lead the race. So Europe has everything to gain. But of course we need our own distinctive approach to artificial intelligence. Too often, I have heard that we should replicate what others are doing and run after their strengths. I think that instead we should invest in what we can do best and build our own strengths here in Europe. Our own strengths are our science and technology mastery that we have given to the world. As this summit shows, there's a distinct European brand of AI. It is already driving innovation and adaptation, and it is picking up speed. So, what are the main features? First, European AI focuses on AI adoption in complex applications, using our unique industrial and manufacturing data and know-how. Second, European AI is cooperative. It brings talents together from different countries, from different sectors, from different backgrounds. It is that same spirit of our collaborative approach to science, which has produced many a breakthrough and a huge pool of talent. Just think about Horizon Europe. And third, European AI embraces the power of open source. And open source can spread much faster along with proprietary systems. It is for all these reasons that the AI startup scene in Europe is booming. The number of unicorns has increased by 10 times in just a few years. So this European brand of open innovation is showing results. But now it needs to be supercharged. It needs to get a push. And this is why it's the right place to be here at this AI Action Summit. We will act in two ways. First, we want to accelerate innovation. Europe has some of the world's fastest public supercomputers. We are now putting them at the service of our best startups and our best scientists so they can forge the AI we need. They can test their model. They can train their model on our supercomputers. In just a few months, we've set up a record of 12 AI factories, and we are investing 10 billion euros in them. And this is not a promise. This is happening right now. And it is the largest public investment in AI in the world. So this will unlock over 10 times more private investment. Our goal is that every company, not only the big players, can access the computing power they need. We want AI developers to compete based on how innovative they are, not just on their access to chips or the size of their financial firepower. And now we are also bringing AI factories to the next level, to AI gigafactories, very large data and computing infrastructure for very large models. We want to replicate the success story of the CERN in Geneva. As you all know, CERN hosts the largest particle accelerator in the world, and it allows the best and the brightest minds in the world to work together. And we want the same to happen in our AI gigafactories. We provide the infrastructure for large computational power. Researchers and entrepreneurs and innovators will be able to join forces. Talents of the world are welcome. Industries will be able to collaborate and federate their data. We're creating safe space for them. Just take the European health data space. Because yes, AI needs competition, but AI also needs collaboration. And AI needs the confidence of the people and has to be safe. And actually, this is the purpose of the AI Act, to provide for one single set of safe rules across the European Union, 450 million people, instead of 27 different national regulations, and safety is in the interest of business. At the same time, I know that we have to make it easier and we have to cut red tape, and we will. Finally, computational power requires immediate, substantial financial capital from both public and private. In this context, I welcome the European AI Champions Initiative that pledges 150 billion euros from providers, investors, and industry. And today I can announce that with our Invest AI initiative, we can top up by 50 billion euros. So thereby, we aim to mobilize a total of 200 billion euros for AI investment in Europe. We will have a focus on industrial and mission-critical applications. It will be the largest public-private partnership in the world for the development of trustworthy AI. And finally, cooperative AI can be attractive well beyond Europe, including our partners in the Global South. And in this spirit, we fully support the AI Foundation that is being launched today. AI can be a gift to humanity, but we must make sure that its benefits are widespread and that its benefits are accessible to all. We want AI to be a force for good. We want an AI where everyone collaborates and everyone benefits. This is our path. This is our European path. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you. Thank you very much, President von der Leyen, for your comments and for the announcements that you made today.
It gives me great pleasure to continue this discussion on unlocking opportunities. And we discussed the opportunities that we tend to speak about a lot in health, in a number of sectors. Let me maybe start by one of the not so obvious ones. Let's start with arts and creative industries. First of all, we have dedicated during this AI week a whole weekend to this topic of AI and art and culture. We have had both wonderful creations showcased by artists, but also discussions about the challenges that lie between AI and creation, because it's not always something that comes as the first example of benefits of AI. With us today, we have Farah Williams. We're delighted to have you here. You're an extraordinarily creative artist, and so who better than you could share a few thoughts about AI and creativity? Farah, please.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I don't know how you guys do this with the thing in the ear. The benefits for me are very different than what we often hear discussed when people reference AI. Most of the time when we hear about AI, we hear mostly fears. It's going to take our jobs, it's going to take your job, it's going to take this, it's going to take that. And it's interesting to me because, you know, as we think about the preparedness for AI, we're worried about what it's going to do, but you have to remember who and what is going to be using it and for what reasons. People will need to use AI. They're going to need jobs. There will be jobs there for them. Will there be some jobs that people lose? Sure. But I think if you're gonna be prepared for AI, then you have to be prepared for AI. Me personally, I see it like I think we have our fears miscasted in the wrong areas. Like, I don't think we should be fearful of what AI is going to do. What we should do, you know, in this whole AI race, what we need to remember is the human race. Because it's humans that are essentially going to be using the AI, and it's what they're going to do. You know, are they people with good conduct or bad conduct? Are they people with great ideas, inspiration, and innovation, or is it criminals? Right? I think we need to work on ourselves. And I think if we can get ourselves in a good place, humming like an engine, then when AI really truly penetrates regular everyday society and community lives, I think it's going to be fine because people will have the right ideas about how we use it. It, in my opinion, you know, it's just like alcohol or a car or firearms, believe it or not. It takes responsibility. Alcohol in the wrong arms, in the wrong hands is a problem. A car in the hands of someone who is too young and inexperienced to drive it could be life-threatening. AI is no different. It's who's using it and what the intention is what I think we need to think about first and foremost.
Do you use AI for some of your, to help you create, or do you just use it in daily life, or do you just not use it?
Well, that's the other thing too. You know, people talk about like creatives using AI. We wouldn't use AI to help us write a song. Well then what would we do? Right? AI is much more like worker bee, minutia, are the ways that we would use it. Other people would use it in a computational way, you know, in some lab or, you know, maybe an organization set up in some sort of, with tech, would use it in a completely different way. But the way that we would use it would be much more like utility. It wouldn't replace creativity. I just think that there's just too much fear around it. And, you know, there was a whole thing around the year 2000 as well. But we're fine. We survived that. Or, you know, in my country they call it libraries. Here it's called a bibliothèque. It's still there. You can go visit it. It's not replaced. It's a beautiful place to walk around in, and you can research. But there's nothing like a search engine, right, Sundar? There's nothing like a beautiful place where you can go and search. But this is the next step. This is the place where you can not only ask questions, but you can get examples back. I think that's an amazing thing, and I think there's nothing to be fearful about. It's just, we just have to be prepared. Just don't treat it the way we did when we brought alcohol into the conversation, or how we did cars. We need to treat this a little bit different. This is a great opportunity for us as a species to move forward with utility.
Well, thank you. I think we've heard over the years lots of comparisons for AI, but alcohol is one that I haven't heard. So, but I take great comfort from from your vision, which is really of AI augmenting artists and your job. Maybe I can ask a question of Sundar Pichai. We're delighted to have you here. I've heard you speak about risks of AI, but also about the way it can help augment communities, for example. So what are your thoughts on this and on the opportunities and how we can unlock them in AI?
First of all, thank you, President Macron, Prime Minister Modi. It's great we are having a conversation on such an important topic. Look, at Google, we have felt this important tension, both, you know, the wonderful opportunities AI presents. It's obviously a dual-use technology, like you gave examples, and so the risks that come with it. So we actually encapsulated this tension as, a bold and responsible, that our approach needs to be both bold and responsible, and there is tension between it, but we grapple with it. The reason we need to be bold is, you know, it is so obvious as we are making progress how profoundly it'll impact many areas. The best example I can think of is with AlphaFold, we have now unlocked, how to decode protein structures. Just so that everyone understands, it used to take one person their entire PhD to do one protein. And within 3 months, AlphaFold unlocked over 200 million protein structures. Now it's an open database, and already we see hundreds of thousands of researchers and biologists using it to develop vaccines, etc. So you can so tangibly feel the impact of progress. So you feel a moral imperative to be bold and accelerate progress there, right? And when it comes to the economy, it's very clear that you'll be unlocking more productivity. And I do worry people who don't adopt it, countries which don't embrace it, can get left behind through this crucial moment. So those are all the opportunities we see, and we want to lean in to drive that progress. Obviously, as Farrell mentioned, it's a technology with dual use, and how do you make sure the bad effects don't propagate? Examples where we are working on, we slow down and think about image generation or video generation. You know, it'll both unleash creativity in the tools of artists and so on, but people can use it to create deep fakes. So we are early on working on technology like SynthID, watermarking technology. We will need standards, and those are areas where governments and private companies can work together to create a standardized way to detect deepfakes, right? And so you have to take that balance as we move through this, and we embrace it. We cherish the tension, we debate it, and we all need to do that more, I think.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you too for highlighting the area of AI and science, where really, first of all, of course, the AlphaFold is absolutely fascinating and led to a Nobel Prize or Nobel Prizes, which is really impressive. But yeah, what you said about also being mindful about standards and tools and open source tools for open science, I think, is particularly important. Maybe let me come back to you in terms of this technology which has an impact around the world. Do you see a challenge in potentially having this opportunity developing more in developed markets, in Western economies, and maybe not around the world? Do you have any thoughts on whether you have fears about that and whether you could see a need for action in this direction?
You know, first of all, I never got a chance to say thank you for having me here, so thank you, guys, and it's nice to be here. I just think that we need to stop using the word fears. Like, I just don't think it's good for the progression of just our species. It's just not really done well for us.
Calling this unlocking opportunities.
Yes.
So we're on opportunity.
Yes. It's, you know, listen, there's one thing for us to be concerned, but not for us to be fearful. You know, it's a utility. And it can make life, and it's also an accelerator. It can make life a whole lot better, a whole lot quicker. But it depends on who's using it as to whether it goes bad quicker. You know, for me, I feel like this is something that the world needs, but I think we need to be ready with ourselves before we fully engage. I don't think that it's about the jobs being lost. I think it's about perspective, and I think it's about what our intentions are. You know, what are you going to do with it when you use it? And we're trying to help people understand. But again, this has been created by brilliant code writers who probably shouldn't be the ones communicating about what it's going to do and what it's going to be.
That's because, a good point.
You know, in their minds, it's like, they're going to take your jobs. Well, the average person hears that, and it freaks them out. But this is no different than, like I said, search engines being created. There was this whole thing on how libraries are going to be burned down and, you know, they were not going to use them anymore. And that's not what's happened. What's happened is search engines make things a whole lot easier. People got answers a lot quicker. Well, now you're going to be able to get renderings and ideas and examples a lot quicker. It's sure it's going to be more than that. But I think for the average human being, that'll be the way that they interact. It will help them accelerate, get answers quicker, be more efficient. That's the average person. Now, on the Silk Road, we're going to have some problems.
Well, thank you. I love your comparison of the library. I think the other night at dinner, someone from a distinguished university said universities have been one of the longest standing institutions of humanity that still exists today. And I think it's the same for libraries.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Maybe, Sunar, on this topic of opportunities and different perceptions around the world, what do you see as short-term or mid-term opportunities from AI? Let's say not 10 years, we don't know what AI will be in 10 years, but and maybe not what we know today, but 2 to 4 years from now and around the world. What do you see as opportunities and ways to make sure they become reality if it's... in case it's not obvious that this happens just by itself?
Look, in a 2 to 4 year time frame, and thank you for, you know, 10 year time frames are hard to predict, but in a 2 to 4 year time frame, maybe I'll highlight a key area which us and a few other companies are working on, which I think will really make progress. We call this agentic workflows. So anywhere you can describe a task in natural language, and the AI can act on your behalf and accomplish that. And so today, to give you an example, there are two examples within Google. We are working. We have a project Mariner. It's a browser extension, so the browser can actually go browse and do things for you, complete and come back. If you look at where the state of the art was maybe a year ago, it was kind of roughly 50% effective. So you give it a complex sequence of tasks, it needs to get everything done accurately. Today it's progressed around 85%, right? And so, but that shows the progress. Similarly for coding, you know, as a software engineer at Google, today when you're programming, the AI is there on the side, it gives you suggestions and you accept it. But we are now working on where you can give it instructions, it'll automatically go and write the program and get it done. And so, and now imagine the impact of this agentic use cases working horizontally across many, many tasks. I think that's going to be very, very powerful. So the real promise of having an AI assistant in the context of anything you're doing, be it while learning something, a radiologist looking at images, a doctor engaging with a patient, all of that is going to be assisted, and it's going to deeply be embedded in your workflows. That is as real as it gets in a 2 to 4 year time frame. And you can imagine the impact from a productivity standpoint, and I think that's one of the most tangible opportunities. I think it's very, very real that it will happen.
Well, may I also say,
please go ahead.
Just to add on to what he was saying, you know, when I was as you were speaking, it reminded me of, I'm a 70s baby. It reminded me of like a lot of the television shows that we grew up on the first 15, 20 years of my life. You know, there was a talking horse. There's a talking car. There's talking robots. And we loved them. And if you looked at the characters in all of these television shows and films, they loved them and they had a great time. And why were they having a great time? Why weren't they panicked? Because this was a part of their everyday lives. These things acted as utilities. Now, the horse was a horse, and it didn't know everything. But the cars and the robots that I remember, they knew everything. You could ask them anything. And I remember a lot of the protagonists, their lives being made a lot easier and a lot more convenient and efficient. And it's going to be no different than that. The things that we worry about, like I said, are the bad conductors.
And we do get used to things once we've had them for a while. Excellent. I think this has been a very interesting discussion. I'd like to thank you both. I'd like to thank our previous speakers on this topic. Again, on this topic of unlocking opportunities, maybe going back to some of the remarks of Prime Minister Modi, we see all around the world people saying, we also want to be part of this. We want to be as ready as people in the US, in some of the European countries, in China. We also want to be part of that. And as such, we have had lots of discussions about how we can make sure open source, decentralized data can help create these decentralized innovation hubs. And to this effect, it gives me great pleasure to welcome to the stage Martin Tisney, CEO of AI Collaborative, who's been working as part of the AI Action Summit team, to tell us about the foundation, the current AI partnership that is being unveiled today. Martin, you have the floor.
Good morning. The way artificial intelligence is built and deployed today is shaping our societies, determining how we work, who has access to healthcare and education, and whether technology expands opportunity or deepens inequality. But too often, the public interest remains an afterthought. That's why I am proud to announce the launch of Current AI, a new partnership dedicated to ensuring that artificial intelligence serves the public interest, that AI serves communities, strengthens economies, and expands opportunity for all. We are at a pivotal moment. The choices we make today will define the role AI plays in our societies for generations to come. We believe the answer lies in collaboration, bringing together governments, researchers, civil society organizations, and communities to make AI more open, more accountable, and more accessible. Public interest technology is both about preventing harm, and at the same time, it's about creating a better future. Imagine an organization using AI that helps oncologists provide tailored treatments to their cancer patients. Imagine AI as a spark for our children's imagination that fires up their creativity rather than dulls it. These are the kinds of possibilities we unlock when AI serves the many, not just the few. Current AI will expand access to high-quality public and private data sets, will invest in open-source tools, and develop systems to assess and evaluate AI's social and environmental impacts. I invite all of you to join us in this effort, because the future of AI isn't something that happens to us. It's something we build together. Thank you.
Artificial intelligence is the cognitive industrial revolution.
Technology is a strong enabler for humanity.
It's super important that we act now together when it's possible to shape it, whereas later where we might regret not doing anything.
We're at an historic moment here in Paris as the group meets to think through what are the implications of these technologies for society.
The question is, will technology drive what our humanity will look like, or will our humanity drive our future?
We have the benefit of this revolution in technology coming hot on the heels of the past 15 years of social media, where we've learned so much about what can go right and what can go wrong.
Well, innovation is great, but I don't believe in innovation for innovation. I think it needs to be innovation with a purpose.
Current AI is an exceptionally promising initiative that brings together funders and others to figure out how we can help shape this technology in a way that serves humanity in a very inclusive manner.
Current AI is a public interest partnership that brings together governments, philanthropy, civil society, and companies to unlock opportunities from AI and at the same time minimize harms.
It's everyone's responsibility to create AI that works in the public interest.
Just having AI does not create the outcomes that we want. Having guardrails, having government, having institutions that are willing to create norms and standards and expectations and aspirations for these powerful tools and technologies are deeply important.
Our focus is really threefold: accessible and available data in privacy-preserving ways, open source AI, ensuring that the open source AI ecosystem is resilient, and the third one is deeply involving the communities that are impacted so that we are problem-centric.
There's a lot of opportunities around applications. In my country, we're investing heavily in agriculture because our population is growing. We have to be able to feed ourselves. AI can help us do that better.
It's really important that not only big tech is capable of developing with AI, so that everyone really can benefit from this technology.
We need to understand that equitable outcomes, responsible outcomes, just are not going to come from the tools themselves.
We need to do things in the affirmative sense, not just think about regulation and things that we want to forbid.
I think especially people who are worried about the future of AI, the most important thing to realize is this is very early. And there's the opportunity for all of us to have a role in shaping how AI plays out. Nothing has been determined yet.
We need community voices. We need governance. We need public capital and a shared vision of the society we hope to create.
AI is an opportunity for us to be better. And we shouldn't take our eyes off that. It's an opportunity for society, for humanity to be better.
Great. Well, thank you to our panelists for the first session. Now, the second session will ask the question, are we ready for the future? And I thought that I would ask you all a question. I know you're heads of government and state, and so usually you don't play games like this, but I'm going to ask you to do it. And my question is something that was raised by Farrell Williams. The question I'm going to ask you is, are you more fearful than hopeful about AI, or are you more hopeful than fearful? And I would like to hear, to see your hands raised. So the first question, which of you is more fearful than hopeful about AI? A room of optimists. One. Okay, and let's just check that everybody's awake. How many of you are more hopeful than fearful about AI? There you have it. A lot of people didn't answer, okay? So some of you are 50-50, I would imagine. Okay, so with that very optimistic audience, we go to the second session.
Do you want to try it?
Yes. Can you hear me? Okay, great. Good morning, Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Doreen Bogdan-Martin. I'm the Secretary General of the International Telecommunications Union. And as the President well knows, 160 years ago in Paris, 20 countries came together, and I think they asked the same question. They said, are we ready? But it wasn't AI, it was actually the telegraph at the time. They came together, they signed the Telegraph Convention, they created the International Telecommunications Union, and it was all about unleashing the potential and the benefits of the telegraph, which would transform communications as we knew it back then. Today, of course, it's all about artificial intelligence. So I'm delighted to be moderating this closing panel of such a fantastic summit, one that I think has given us a glimpse, a sort of glimpse into a future where artificial intelligence can drive progress for people and for planets in unprecedented ways. As we saw, we have a room of optimists here. Many people filled with hope, as am I, to see how we can use artificial intelligence to eradicate disease, to boost food production, and also to revolutionize how we learn and how we work. But is humanity prepared for an AI-driven future that feels like it's coming at us faster than ever before? And to help us answer that question, I have the great honor of introducing someone who deeply understands both the challenges and the opportunities of artificial intelligence and how it is already transforming our world. Someone whose vision and foresight led to the adoption of the Global Digital Compact. So, ladies and gentlemen, as we kick off this final session of the Paris AI Action Summit, please join me in welcoming the United Nations Secretary General, Antonio Guterres. Please.
Excellence.
Excellencies, dear friends. Let me begin by thanking President Macron and Prime Minister Modi for convening this AI Action Summit. Dear friends, let's go straight to the point. Let us look at the world that surrounds us, over and beyond those who are in this room. Our meeting poses a fundamental question about our collective relationship with artificial intelligence. Are we ready for the future? The answer is easy. No. We may not even collectively be ready for the present. In what seems like the blink of an eye, AI has gone from the stuff of science fiction to a powerful force that is transforming our world, reshaping the way we live, work, and interact, fueling breakthroughs in education, healthcare, agriculture, but also putting to the test our shared values and fundamental rights. The power of artificial intelligence carries immense responsibilities. Today, that power sits in the hands of a few. While some companies and countries are racing head-on with record investments, most developing nations find themselves left out in the cold. This growing concentration of AI capabilities risks deepening geopolitical divides. We must prevent a world of AI haves and have-nots. Let us all work together and make sure that artificial intelligence must bridge the gap between developed and developing countries and not widen this gap. It must accelerate sustainable development, not entrench inequalities.
The United Nations offers an inclusive, transparent, and effective platform for AI solidarity. And we are working to strengthen the platform. The Global Digital Compact, adopted at the Summit of the Future, established the first universal agreement on the governance of AI. It brings the world together around a shared vision, one where technology serves humanity, not the other way around. The creation of an independent international scientific panel on AI will be central to translating this vision into reality. By pooling global expertise, the scientific panel will promote a common understanding of AI risks, benefits, capabilities and opportunities, and help bridge knowledge gaps. I urge everyone to support the creation without delay. Member States also agreed to establish a global dialogue on AI governance within the United Nations to ensure that all countries have a voice in shaping the future of AI. Through the global dialogue, we can align governance efforts around the world and reinforce their interoperability, uphold human rights in AI applications, and prevent misuse. The UN provides an inclusive forum for cooperating, complementing existing mechanisms such as the OECD AI principles, G7 and the Global Partnership on AI, as well as regional efforts by the African Union, the European Union, ASEAN and the Council of Europe. And I am confident that discussions at this summit will help enrich this dialogue. The compact also calls for building AI capacity in developing nations. And this is not only about technology diffusion. We need concerted efforts to build sustainable digital infrastructure at an unprecedented scale, foster talent and train workforces to develop, deploy and maintain AI systems, and ultimately empower peoples and nations to become not just users, but active participants in the AI revolution. A global AI capacity building network, as proposed by my high-level advisory body on AI, is an economic necessity and a moral imperative. Today's launch of Current AI, a public interest partnership, is an important contribution. I will soon present a report on innovative voluntary financing models and capacity building initiatives to help all countries harness AI as a force for good. And finally, we know that AI can be a force for climate action and energy efficiency. But we also know AI power-intensive systems are already placing an unsustainable strain on our planet. So it is crucial to design AI algorithms and infrastructures that consume less energy and integrate AI into smart grids to optimize power use. From data centers to training models, AI must run on sustainable energy so that it fuels a more sustainable future. Excellencies, I began with a question. Let me end with a few more. Who decides what problems AI should or should not resolve? Who benefits most from its deployment? Who bears the cost of its mistakes? These questions affect everyone, and so the answers must also involve everyone. It is in all our interests for governments and technology leaders to commit to global guardrails, to share best practices, and to shape fair policy and business models. The whole world benefits when development banks and philanthropic community provide catalytic funding to jumpstart capacity building worldwide. And we all stand to gain when academia and thought leaders help to navigate through this complex landscape. AI is not standing still, neither can we. Let us move for an AI that is shaped by all of humanity, for all of humanity. In other words, let's make sure we are ready for the future right now, and I thank you.
Secretary General, ladies and gentlemen, you heard the Secretary General. We urgently need to get ready for the future and make sure that AI is shaped by all of humanity, for all of humanity. To help us do that, I'm joined by an incredible group of three panelists, and I'd like to introduce them to you now. We have to my right, His Excellency Prime Minister Orpo, the Prime Minister of Finland. To my left, we have Dr. Fatih Birol, the Executive Director of the International Energy Agency. And back to my right, we have Madam Soo-Yeon Choi. She is the CEO of Naver, South Korea's largest internet company and provider of digital services from search to robotics, cloud solutions, and of course, AI. So, Prime Minister, let me start with you, and if you could share with us some of the challenges, some of the opportunities you have seen in Finland to try to scale artificial intelligence so that it benefits all. Prime Minister, over to you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Your Excellencies, let me first extend my thanks and congratulations to President Macron and the government of France for making this summit reality, and also to Prime Minister Modi co-hosting this very important summit. This is landmark effort for building consensus on global cooperation on artificial intelligence, and it is an achievement already how you are gathered, so many of us here. And I want also to recognize the important role that the United Nations plays in building global consensus on these matters. Thank you very much for your speech, Secretary General. As the Prime Minister of Finland, I saw huge potential on AI. Potential to strengthen our welfare and security, to boost sustainable economic growth. But as a first answer to your question, how have we solved the challenges in scaling the use of AI in Finland? So we have invested in the infrastructure we need to harness the benefits of AI. In Finland, we have decided already years ago that AI is a national top priority for us. It is also top priority to my government. In Finland, we like concrete actions, and we have increased our already high public investment to research and innovation during my government. We are going to reach 4% of GDP by 2030. As the field of AI is developing rapidly, we have decided to keep investing in, first, enabling infrastructure, second, access to quality data, and third, world-class supercomputers. We are also building competence through attracting, educating world-class talent. Recently, we have invested additional funding to launch a European Elias AI Institute in Finland. These issues should also be priorities for Europe. As we know, Europe as a whole is behind its key competitors, and we need to step up our game. We need to strike a balance between regulation and innovation, and make sure that we don't create additional obstacles for the beneficial usage of AI. In Finland, we have many world-class companies in addition to a growing startups ecosystem. These include Finnish friends Nokia, which invest heavily in AI-powered networks, and the elevator and escalator operator Kone, known for AI expertise, such as predictive maintenance. I see AI being closely connected with protecting rule of law and democracy. We need AI that is aligned for our values. This is where international cooperation in AI governance is critical. My second point is public-private partnership. As a small country, we can be fast and cooperate flexibly across sectors. Our national AI strategies have always been prepared in close collaboration with all stakeholders. This is natural for us. In our case, public and private sector investments are coming together to take AI research and application in Finland to the next level. Finland was recently chosen to host one of the 7 European AI factories, and we are already working to build next generation pan-European supercomputers through Lumi AI. Serious investments in quantum computing are also taking place in Finland. Our context also means we can quickly launch pilots and experiments. For example, we are now looking for using AI for legislative drafting. And thirdly, sustainable AI. We must find ways to address the energy efficiency demand for AI in a sustainable way. Finland is home for one of the most eco-efficient data centers in the world, running on green energy. And the heat generated is circulated back into the community. This is part of circular economy where resources are not wasted. And finally, Mr. President Macron and Prime Minister Modi, here you are showing the way forward, and it is very crucial for all of us that you are holding this summit here. We are happy to support the Sustainable AI Coalition. This is an excellent way to raise standards for more sustainable AI. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Prime Minister. I appreciate the points, in particular about the public-private partnership, of course, the sustainability angles. I'm sure many leaders in this room can relate to the way you describe the Finnish experience and how you have tried to scale artificial intelligence in ways that benefit all citizens and all communities. So thank you so much for that. That brings me to my next panelist. Dr. B. Roll, the Executive Director of the Leading Authority on Energy, the International Energy Agency. So, Dr. B. Roll, if you can share with us a bit why it's so important that we understand and we need to make the link between energy and technologies like artificial intelligence, and also how IEA is approaching the AI revolution in your work. Please, over to you.
Many thanks. May I first thank and congratulate President Macron. Mr. President, once again, on such an important topic for the humanity, you brought the global leaders, companies, all stakeholders together to a constructive dialogue. Thank you very much for that, Mr. President. And also congratulations, Mr. President, in the already in 2017, 8 years ago, you have identified AI is a key topic for France and beyond. Also, thanks to Prime Minister Modi for co-hosting this event, and also congratulations for the recent India AI mission strategy and making strong steps. As we speak now, ladies and gentlemen, the largest data center of the world is being put together in Gujarat. It's a huge data center. Congratulations, Mr. Prime Minister, for that. I would like to talk about very briefly on the AI energy nexus. And it is, I can tell you, it is not an easy one, not a straightforward one. It is creating challenges for the energy, but also opening opportunities for the energy sector. And at the end, I will make an announcement which I believe is of interest to many of us here. So, first the challenge. In the global energy sector, we have already many, many challenges. And now, on top of that, with the data centers, there is an additional need for energy, electricity. There is no AI without energy. Just to put in a context, one medium-sized data center consumes electricity as much as 100,000 households. Just to give you the context, so much electricity is needed. And AI companies, rightly so, want to have secure electricity, affordable electricity, and sustainable electricity. Therefore, the countries that have the electricity supplies secure, sustainable, and affordable, they are one step ahead of the others, because they are ready. Now, when we look globally, as we do in the IEA, we already see the electricity demand trends being impacted with the additional demand coming from data centers. But the problem is the following, dear colleagues. A data center you built in less than 1 year, but a transmission line for electricity you need about 5 years to build. There is a decalage, there is a gap of time between those two, and how to make sure that the governments, tech companies, and the energy industry work together is a key challenge for all of us, and it's a key topic for this meeting as well. We look at the all data centers investments in the world which have the FID for the next 5 years. Thousands of them are going to be built. And we look at the electricity supplies coming, and there is a significant gap which may well lead to delays or cancellations of some data centers project. So, this is the challenge in front of us, of the governments finding electricity for the data centers in a clean way, in a secure way, and in an affordable way. So, this is the challenge. What about the opportunity? Now, AI accelerates the innovation in energy technologies. For example, battery chemistry, much cheaper, much more environmentally friendly, will come soon as a result of AI. We are going to see that AI, it is going to optimize our electricity systems and increase the efficiency, the grids, transmission lines, and the others. It will help us, AI, to better predict the weather events. So these are all very good. Plus, AI data centers create new business models and give momentum to technologies such as nuclear power, including the small modular reactors, or new technologies of geothermal energies. So this also creates new challenges and make those technologies investable for the world. So we see a lot of opportunities coming with the AI for the innovation side and providing productivity efficiency. The third point, and I would like to finish here, and an announcement from the IEA. At the IEA, we believe in numbers. And when we come to AI and energy, there are many uncertainties. It is very new. So we have decided this coming April to launch an IEA observatory for energy and AI, where we are going to look all the data centers, how much electricity they will need, what are the electricity plans there, and the impact of AI implications on the energy technology so that the entire world can learn from best practices and it will be an open source for everybody. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you so much for that and for elaborating on those challenges that you see as well as the opportunities. I'm very excited about the observatory. I think that represents exactly the kind of data-driven scientific approach that we need to be able to better understand AI's energy footprint as this transformative technology continues to reshape society and reshape our planet. And we also think that observatory and the AI energy metrics that you're looking at is an imperative, and it's actually a great complement to something the Prime Minister has also just mentioned, and that's the launch, and if I can say today, of our Coalition for Sustainable Artificial Intelligence. We're delighted and excited that this is part of the Paris AI Action Summit. And this coalition was initiated by France, so thank you so much, Mr. President, by the United Nations Environmental Program, and also by my organization, the ITU. It's a truly multi-stakeholder effort, and it's about ensuring that artificial intelligence develops in the interest not only of our planet, but also of all people, including the developing world. We have more than 90 partners, and Prime Minister Modi, I look to you because India is one of the latest partners, so thank you also for that. We have more than 90 that have joined this coalition, including leading AI companies. We have digital infrastructure firms. We have AI research labs. We have NGOs. We have investment firms. And I think it's actually a historic moment where we show that we can do good things when we join forces, we collaborate, and we advance for a common cause and purpose, which is sustainable artificial intelligence. At the ITU, we're also proud to be contributing to this effort. We want to make sure that all countries have the tools, have the instruments to benefit from AI. We're excited to bring our AI for Good platform also to the fore, where we're focused on skilling, we're focused on innovation as well. We have the CODAS work that we're doing that focuses on sustainability for digital services, and we're also working, of course, with our standards partners. We've heard standards mentioned this morning by many. So looking at sustainable AI standards and also advancing climate commitments through our Green Digital Action Initiative. I think it is quite a global effort. It spans all regions, and look forward to taking it further. And that brings me to my next and final panelist, who's also part of this coalition. So thank you, Soo-yeon Choi from Naver, for being part of it. If you can share with us a bit on the sustainability piece, but also shifting a bit the conversation, how you're using AI to work at scale to enrich both culture and productivity. Over to you.
So this is 12 Won. So good afternoon, everyone. I'm Soo-yeon Choi, CEO of Naver. So first, I'd like to express my gratitude for having me at this meaningful event. And for some of the audience that maybe is not so familiar with Naver, I'd like to introduce about our company. Naver is one of the few companies that has defended its domestic search market, hence its own leadership, without any other government intervention. We are also the third company globally to develop our own hyperscale AI model. We are go-to service for the majority of the population in Korea, with users in globally. We started our company as a search engine 25 years ago, and our services have expanded to social media, commerce, fintech, content, and cloud as well. This is very interesting. Today's topic, are we ready for the future? It is the question. It is all of our employees has it in our mind, because we are not as big as global giant, but we successfully survive for now. For Naver, diversity is one of our most important values, because we are the search engine. So if you ask me how we survived, I can answer that because we are always serious at we have our own digital ecosystem. Our ecosystem showcases the flywheel that connects all of our users, creators, sellers, and sometimes user to user through search. Creators and sellers use our search engine to promote their content. Users can find the information they want while sharing information and communicating with each other. Since the very beginning of our history, when we didn't have enough Korean documents, you can imagine. And we don't have enough Korean documents compared to English, and we have to compete against global search engines by providing one specific to the Korean language. So that's why we especially try to find solution to the Korean web, where there weren't enough digitalized documents. Along the way, we realized that what people are looking for is not websites, but information, especially real-life information. And that's how we began to create our own digital ecosystem. For instance, Naver created a service where user can ask questions and have it answered by another user. The outcome of such engagement among users was integrated with our search and became meaningful information for many people in Korea. We continue to learn these kind of services that connect users, so their contents and information can be connected the world through search. We believe this kind of our efforts continue in the age of AI, where AI is changing search and content platform and user experience paradigms. Questions and answers to numerous information, posts that deliver daily tips, and unique products from sellers, these contents are what we recreate with AI as everyday tools for users. Our AI will be a tool that connects users, creators, and sellers in a more refined way. AI-enabled search will allow users to enjoy content by various creators that aligns with their intent. Using AI, we are building a search tool that identifies more information comprehensively. This tool also lets users connect more deeply with content that suits their intents and interests. We are also applying AI to commerce to help users discover stores and products by a wider range of sellers. By understanding users' underlying intent and context, AI will recommend products their users really want. This is expected to create a commerce platform where various tastes and personalities coexist and are actively connected. And we have a very interesting service named Webtoon, which is online comic manga platform with stories, plots, and productions. AI curator plays an important role. It recommends titles by identifying what users like, which helps them discover more genres and stories. In addition, AI will be a tool that unlocks the potential of users, creators, and sellers, and help them grow. Creators on Webtoon can use their AI painter tool. With the help of this tool, they can focus on creative stories or detailed sketches. On the commerce platform, sellers run their business with AI-enabled marketing, customer service, and product display solutions. This helps them focus more on essential work, such as product development. We own key fundamental AI techs and large-scale services used by millions of users. That's how we gained our know-how and experience to create and develop a flywheel that can bring bigger opportunity to the digital ecosystem in Korea. Recently, we've seen possibilities of developing high-performance AI models more efficiently. This is expected to pave the way for the company like Naver to narrow the technological gap between the global big tech companies. With big tech companies dominating the global search market, Naver has become the third alternative with our extensive experience and know-how. We believe the same can be said for the global AI market. Naver's strategy will combine our experience, know-how, and large-scale services with our own AI techs. Based on this, we'll continue to create a flywheel that can bring bigger opportunities to the digital ecosystems. Together with the global community, Naver will strive to become a new option that adds to the diversity of the AI ecosystem. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing the Naver story and how you leverage the local context to create such a thriving digital ecosystem. Thank you for that. So, ladies and gentlemen, we started this session with a question. Are we ready? The UN Secretary General made it very clear we must be. And I want to thank my three panelists. Thank you for sharing how we can get there and how we can do it sustainably. Thank you for that. I think with countries like Finland that are already adopting and scaling artificial intelligence with an inclusive, iterative, agile approach to innovation, with international organizations like IEA bringing essential data and analysis to help inform the global dialogue on energy and artificial intelligence, and of course with companies like Naver, making sure that AI is actually relevant to local markets, to cultures, because that's how we can make sure that no one is left behind in this AI revolution. Most of all, we need the international multi-stakeholder cooperation. I think that's something that's also been shown in our Coalition for Sustainable Artificial Intelligence. I do think we are better prepared than ever. I think we are prepared to ensure that AI is beneficial, that it's beneficial to all of humanity, to people and for planet. And Prime Minister, as you mentioned this morning, that artificial intelligence is used for good and for all. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. And I hand back to Alessandra. Over to you.
Thank you, Doreen, and thank you for that great recap of the second session. Well, all that remains then is for the last word. And the last word goes to our host, President Macron.
Bien, chers amis, merci beaucoup.
Well, dear friends, thank you very much. Thank you for being here and being involved in this summit. We had 700 participants from around the world. And thank you for sketching out the outcomes and the Paris AI actions. And with our friend Prime Minister Narendra Modi, who coordinated the work with us, we trust that they will be a solid basis for the future. We have some 10 commitments, around 100 decisions, initiatives, and coalitions on subjects which are greatly diverse in range and which will make it possible to tackle the challenges raised in the course of this work. Obviously, I can't sum up everything that's been said in the course of the summit, but I would like to point out three key take-home messages. First, we're all convinced that this is a time of innovation and acceleration. And this is why in the course of the discussions, and we've seen it today, that we have this dilemma of what's positive, what's negative, whether we're afraid or feeling there's hope. And we'll see that the actions will speak for themselves. We know that we want to be involved in this. We realize that this is competition, and we are decided to do this because this is a matter of sovereignty. And sovereignty for all participants. So we're living a moment of great innovation and extreme speed. It's a time of acceleration of choices and of investments. In the course of the summit, we announced $109 billion in private funding for artificial intelligence. That's from France and international sources. And we just heard $200 billion from the European Union. And so we can see that. Well, we know what's happening in the United States. We know there's been great success in China, and we've had an announcement from our friends in the Gulf about the major investments there. There are investments in India, Canada, and so many others here today. And we know that the race is definitely being run. That's the first thing. But we have to realize that we're all involved in running the race. And the figures that I just gave you, show you, and I would like to say how pleased we are that this is a real moment of awakening and ambition to be involved in this in Europe. We want to invest in talent, training younger generations, have more and more positions for research and at university level. We want to invest in data and the consolidation of data, and we need to have a framework for accessing the data. We want to invest in data centers, and the president of the commission announced the program for setting up a data center in Europe for public research and startups. And we announced a number of massive scale data centers funded by the private sector in France, and we made the announcement here at the summit. And the strong point here is there's real ability to have sustainable low carbon energy sources, and this is where the French model of civil nuclear power is a real strong point. And together we decided to accelerate work on applications. We've seen this has to be applied science, applications in mobility, in defense and security, and there are a number of large groups in France and international countries made announcements and signed up contracts with new players in artificial intelligence with new partnerships, grasping the opportunities here. And we are all convinced that artificial intelligence will be an opportunity for us all to learn better, to have better healthcare, to have better work, and to have a better life in our societies. And this is a society of competition, innovation, and sovereignty. But this is a period, as I said, of innovation and acceleration. The second message is how we can build up trust. And to get away from this dilemma of risks on the one side and opportunity on the other, thinking that the only option is regulations, which might be an obstacle to innovations, I think that the challenge we are all up against is that governments have to take action, but also civil society needs to act, and private enterprise does too. Major investors need to too. We need to know how we can have trust in artificial intelligence and the use thereof, because that will be the key part of its success. Because if we can't trust it, then we won't have artificial intelligence adopted around the world or spread around the world, and we'll see that in a few years' time there will be lots of our fellow citizens saying we don't want AI in our country. It's a source of problems and negative impact on our lives. Now, what do we need for establishing such a climate of trust? First, you have to have fair and open access. And the question of access is of decisive importance. We need to have wide-ranging access, and we've seen this internationally with players from Asia-Pacific, Latin America, and other regions of the world. And we need to have access for all continents and all countries. And we've seen this with Prime Minister Modi. This is the third path. We don't want a system of those who are in power and the rest are vassals. We want to have this serving the entire planet. And I don't believe that the world will be divided between the global north and the global south, just looking at one another, because if we want to have trust in artificial intelligence, we have to make sure there is equitable access to these innovations in all continents. And this is a challenge for both public authorities and the private sector. And, of course, this is a challenge in our societies, too. We must not let a divide be established between the older generation and younger generations, or in certain parts of our countries, with differences in access to artificial intelligence. Then the next question is the quality of the data. If we want to trust artificial intelligence, we have to have greater and more consolidated quality data. And that way we will have trust in them and they can be certified. And we want to have models, we want to have open access, but it has to be multiple access. We're all different, you can see it just looking around the auditorium here. And the example we saw from Prime Minister Modi earlier with the left hand and the right hand, we can see the different models. We want open source models and multiple sorts which reflect our diversity, which look like us. And that is why open source and multiple models and opening up databases for the training of such models and the diversity of that and the transparency of algorithms are key elements to establish trust in artificial intelligence. We also want to have a proper respect for privacy. We've heard this in discussions. And we are here in a world where data is so open and we can accelerate innovation with it, but there has to be proper protection of privacy. And so we need to have a framework to establish trust so that each citizen has the assurance that their privacy is protected. We want a trust framework so that we can make a distinction between deep fakes and proper information. We want a framework that will protect our authorities from cyber attacks and means that we can have a calm environment to work with AI. We want a framework to have proper respect for creativity, and each person creating something has their rights. You get author's rights, copyright, and so on for artists, reporters, writers, and so on. And we want to have a situation where artificial intelligence is not used for mass control, but we have to have a proper law and order in our environments. We have to have proper arrangements because artificial intelligence needs so much energy, and yet we want to protect our planet and biodiversity. So we have to foster artificial intelligence which will find low-carbon electricity and more frugal models which will make it possible for us to use less energy. Now, what I'm sketching out here are what we could call the commons or the pillars, and they're not other people's problems. And they shouldn't be seen as a problem which innovators are just referring to someone else who would have to deal with them. These are inbuilt problems. They are part and parcel of artificial intelligence. And this is what means that we will be able to trust or not trust artificial intelligence when it becomes part of our lives, our countries, and our population. And we need to have that so that there can be international order. So this concept of trust and some of the basic paradigms that I've just mentioned are the framework that we need and must work with. We've launched the first coalitions and we have concrete actions. We've got the current AI Foundation, which is a response, and we've got 400 million euros which have already been committed, and France is going to be contributing some 100 million euros, and I would urge you all to be part of this. And you could say it's a public-private partnership, and it will be an answer to this question of trust. And then there's the question of data. We need to have the trust so that we know what type of data there is, what security they have, and what quality the data is. We need to have sustainable AI, and that's going to be part of the whole question of trust, and that's going to give us transparency so that public and private players can be involved. We've also decided on observatories for both social issues and energy issues, and this is the framework which means we'll be able to look at issues such as climate and also accessibility and cover of access to artificial intelligence. So these are the foundations that we've set next to the acceleration so that AI can become a source of trust. And basically, it will be what we could call shared or common order. And this brings me to my last argument, and this is that we must defend our way of life, a multilateral way of life, a multiple way of expressing artificial intelligence. 7 years ago, with Prime Minister Trudeau, under the auspices of the G7, which Canada chaired, we launched the Global Partnership on Artificial Intelligence. And it's now housed with the OECD, and we can see the dialogue. There are some 44 countries, there are 44 countries at the moment, will be some 60 in the very near future. And we are working on standards. There are standards with players from different backgrounds and different cultures. The United Nations has the digital compact, the Global Digital Compact, and we've got the Secretary General, he mentioned it, and we've got UNESCO, the Francophone Organization, the Council of Europe, under their different areas have worked on this, and we know that these are key organizations, and we can see that in these different organizations, as we can see in this summit here, that we have international governance of artificial intelligence. And this means that on the basis of actions and coalitions which we have now launched, will make it possible for us to consolidate the elements needed for us to have trustworthy artificial intelligence at this period of acceleration and innovation, and we will be able to set the rules, because we do need these rules. We need it for AI to move forward. This is not being wary of artificial intelligence. It's not running counter to innovation, but it's looking to the future so that we can have an international area where we will avoid our efforts being fragmented. So these are the ideas that I wanted to share with you. And we believe in innovation, we believe in acceleration, we believe in investment, and we also want to have AI which we can consider trustworthy and which will unite the international community. And I would like to conclude with some words of thanks to all of you who have worked on this and the foundations of this joint weather. I would like to thank Anne Bouvreau, the special envoy for this summit, and she did the work on all five continents there. Thank you to her and her wonderful team, Martin Tisney, Sanat Kossel, Roxana Varsa, Guillaume Poupard, Henri Verdier, Axel Méliès, Hermé Mébine, and Chloé Gouvin, who is the Secretary General of the summit, which has been perfectly organized. Thank you to the ministers, and thank you to the Grand Palais, the Palais de la Découverte, which hosted us here. And thank you one and all for being here. And in conclusion, I would like to invite my friend, Prime Minister Narendra Modi, to come up and say a few words and to make a major announcement. Prime Minister.
Friends, today's discussions have brought one thing. There is unity in vision and unity in purpose across stakeholders. I welcome the decision to set up the AI Foundation at the Council for Sustainable AI. I congratulate France and my dear friend, President Macron, for this initiative and assure our full support. We must also make the Global Partnership for AI truly global in nature. It should be more inclusive of the Global South and its priorities, concerns and needs. To build on the momentum of this Action Summit, India would be happy to host the next summit. Thank you.
Everybody up for a group photo with the co-host, please.